Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. Thank you very much for being part of our day. And Joan Pride is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's steadfast supporter of all the things that we do. And Joan, welcome back, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Jim.
Although we said this last week, because you were here on New Year's
Day.
Yeah,
we've already done this. We did it a week ago, and I had my hangover after New Year's Eve.
But did we actually...
So I should be the one who doesn't remember.
But did we actually celebrate your sixth anniversary?
No, you didn't say a thing about it.
Well, happy anniversary.
Well, gee, thank you.
Well, I'm not sure if it was last week. I think it may actually be this week. We have those records. We're like baseball.
We have a lot of senior moments going on here.
We're like baseball. Oof. We have those records. Let me see here. It was actually, you know what? It was the sixth day of January.
Really?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
So
you should have sent me flowers 2 days ago, I guess.
I should have.
I
think they're on the way, Joan. I think they're winding their way.
You know
how slow deliveries are these days. Anyway, we're glad you're here, and thank you for being such a steadfast supporter of small business owners and all that we do here. Joan, Pollyanna Kiplinger has struck again, hasn't it?
Yes, things are going to be good.
Yeah, you guys are pretty giddy about 2004, aren't you?
Yeah. We're believing in this recovery, I think.
Yeah? Why?
And I think the point we're trying to make here is that not to worry, because we've had glimpses of a recovery that have sort of fizzled out. But we're saying this one isn't fizzling.
Well, let's list some of the things. Let's walk through some of the things. I completely agree with you. And with any luck, my article this week in this week's newsletter will be all about this if I can get it done in time to get it in this week's edition. But let's identify some of the reasons why Kiplinger is right about this. You want to start?
Well, the big thing I think you're probably referring to is, as we say, businesses are flexing their muscles, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been waiting for this business spending to pick up, and now we finally see evidence that it's happening, and it's going to be sustained. It's not just a blip on the radar screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a broad brush indicator, but the thing is when you combine a pent up demand for a lot of things for the last 3 years, especially technology, Joan.
Yes.
When you combine the weakened dollar, which is helping U.S. manufacturers,
right?
You combine an improved economy and a little bit of an improved outlook, say, with some of our trading partners like Japan. You know, that's good news. And when you look at the accommodative fiscal policies that the Fed has right now with liquidity and with interest rates, that's making business easier to acquire through any kind of financing that we might have to do.
Right,
there's
exactly.
There's so many. And Joan, one other reason why I think that this recovery is not only not false, but it's going to be sustained and strong, is because the businesses that are still standing after the last 3 years, and as you know, Joan, we've gone through some really unique, we've had a really unique 3-year period here with all the different things that have happened.
That's right.
That the companies, especially the small ones that are still standing, are stronger and better able to take advantage of this recovery. So that's another reason why I think it's this.
Sure. Our own business here at Kiplinger saw that. I mean, mm-hmm. Financial publishing has taken a huge hit over the last 2 to 3 years, and we saw some of the weaker players die off.
Yeah. Yeah. If you hadn't retained those earnings, as I talk about a lot, and if you didn't find a way to operate within the current economic environment, you just didn't make it, did you?
And that, no question about it.
And so, Joan, that's the reason why I say, and this is the piece that I'm working on right now for the letter, I say that this recovery is going to be stronger and longer than the last one.
Wow. The last one was pretty long.
And you thought you guys were Pollyannas.
And you've out-Pollyannaed us.
What about, here's another thing that you, tell us about the about what the new hires, you guys reported that. That's another element in all this.
Yeah, we're saying 1.8 million new jobs in 2004. And in fact, this is interesting. Nearly as many per month in 2004 as we had over all of last year. So that's like an explosion of new jobs compared to 2003.
What does that do to a consumer economy?
Well, that poor consumer that's been, you know, going along and spending, they're going to be spending more, and they'll be more confident. Not only will they have more money in their pockets to spend, but they will feel confident that they can keep on spending.
And what was that
job security?
What was that Dickens character who said, "God bless them, everyone"?
Right.
Who was that? What was his name?
Tiny Tim, I think.
Tiny Tim, yeah, Tiny Tim. That's it. Tiny Tim. God bless them, everyone.
Yeah.
Couldn't do without them.
We need every one of them.
Absolutely.
And they're the ones that tided us over during the lean years when businesses were not spending.
Which is an incredible statement, a very strong testimony for consumer economies. And so, Joan, as China becomes more of a consumer economy, then you know what's that going to mean for the global economy? Think about some of those things. I mean, 2004. The 21st century is going to be a very, very exciting year. If we can just get rid of these terrorists, Joan, we could have a lot of fun in the 21st
century.
Well,
that's true. That's a big job, though.
Yep, it is, but something's being done about it, and I'm
absolutely
glad that it is. Joan, you identified a couple of the companies down, a couple of the industries down here that you say are going to, some are going to do well and some are not going to do well. One of the ones that you identified are banks.
Yeah, I'm kind of wishing that your listeners could see this nifty little bar graph we have here, which
kind
of lays it out very easily. And yes, the financial services industry is going to do better, particularly banks. Because we're saying that they're going to have more demand for business loans, so they'll be making more loans, but interest rates will be staying lower, so they don't have to pay interest on deposits that's too high.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And not only that, but we're going to take a quick break here in a minute, folks. When we come back, I'm going to tell you why I think maybe it might not be a bad idea to invest in banks, because of small business owners and what their business means to these banks. And that comes up right after these messages. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Here's Robert Cray to take us out. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our website is www.jbspa.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our free newsletter, which comes every week by email, Sunday afternoon, actually. I send it to you just so you can make sure you've got it to start your week off. And now in our fifth year, so check that out when you get a chance at jbspa.com, plus all the other things you can do at our website. Joan Pratt is our guest, and Joan, we're talking about how the economy is going to do. In particular, we're focusing on some of the industries, and we were mentioning the banking industry. And the reason banks are going to do well, especially independent community banks this year, is because they only have to pay, not only are they not paying very high interest rates or very, very much for the deposits that they're making, you know, they're paying like 1% or maybe a little bit less, especially for short-term money.
Right.
And it doesn't cost them that much to borrow money from the government if they need it, or from other banks. But still, when they make small business loans, they're still making those at a premium. They're making those at prime plus, prime plus 1, 2, 3, 4 maybe. And
right.
Even if it's prime plus 3, it's still only 7%. So small business owners can borrow money at 7% and be okay. They'll be all right. But when rates were high, let's say if the prime rate was at 7,
right,
and they added 3, well, that's 10% now.
Ooh.
And so that's getting to the prohibitive.
That's getting prohibitively expensive, yeah.
So what I'm getting at with interest with the Fed accommodative policies that we've got right now, it helps small business owners get loans. They can pay the premium that banks are going to charge them because they're higher risks. I'm
right.
not saying it's right, folks. I'm just saying it's the real world. And banks wind up, small business owners do okay, and banks do okay. So it's good for everybody. Now, you've got some news. You've uncovered some news in the area of small business lending. Joan, what is it?
Well, in an effort not to be seen as too Pollyanna-ish, I have a little bit of news that is bad, but I don't think it's bad long term. The Small Business Administration was forced to announce that it was sort of freezing its 7A loan program. And for your listeners, I'm sure they know
right.
that. It just happened. Mm-hmm. I think they just announced it yesterday.
Yep.
They announced it yesterday. And the reason was because, and as you know, this is the popular loan guarantee program. This is for a small business owner who can't get a bank loan on his or her own. They go to the SBA and they get the guarantee.
Well, they actually, what they do, I'm sorry, Joe.
Well, they get it through the bank.
They go to the bank and the bank works with them through the SBA.
If the bank is, right, that's what I meant. If the bank is a participating lender, then mm-hmm. they can get the guarantee that way. Now, what the SBA has said was they basically run out of money to guarantee loans because, as you know, the Congress has had trouble passing its budget, and all it did was sort of extend the old budget for a few more months. Mm-hmm. So the SBA at this point has no more money for that program. Now, what I've discovered is that they are hoping for another $470 million from Congress when Congress returns, and that would kind of let them limp along through January in the hopes that Congress would finally get through this budget mess and pass the fiscal 2004 budget. And
right.
remember, fiscal 2004 began last October 1st,
yep.
so you can see how things have kind of gotten a little behind here.
So now folks, you remember when I was saying that we should not, that if they don't pass the budgets, that we should not pay them their checks? Now you realize how the chickens have come home to roost.
Exactly.
In the form of the SBA. I still say if they don't get their job done, we don't pay them.
Right, because this is a good concrete example of what happens when you don't get the fiscal work done.
And believe it or not, folks, this is going to have a negative impact on the economy, on a lot of
yes.
small business owners. But let me tell you how, Joan, if this had to happen, this is probably not a bad time for it to happen because balance sheets are stronger right now than they used to be, than they were a year ago, 2 years ago. And so fewer small business owners need an SBA guarantee than they would have a year or two ago.
Right.
But there's still plenty of them that do. And the other thing, Joan, is sometimes banks use the SBA as a crutch. In other words, rather than going ahead and taking the risk and making the loan on their own, they'll bail out on the SBA.
Oh, yeah.
See, and
makes
so
sense.
And so, you know, maybe this may make banks have to start, actually being bankers and evaluating the risk better. And,
wow.
You know, and,
right.
you know, and of course, as you can tell, I probably don't get invited to a lot of bank parties, but, but I'm not on their Christmas card list either. But no, we got, you know, we love our bankers, but, you know,
right.
that's human nature, Joan. If somebody's going to give you a chance to bail you out, which the SBA kind of does with their guarantees, if there's a default, you know, anybody would take that. So
right. Well, and going back to being Pollyanna-ish for just a second, I wonder if you could take this this problem as a sign that there is a recovery out there, because it must mean that loan demand is
yes.
up.
It is.
And where there
yes.
was a period, I can remember when I was covering banking, calling the banks, you know, a year ago, and them saying, well, we're not having that much of a problem refusing loans because we're just not seeing people come
That's
in
right.
the door.
That's right. No, there's no question about it, Joan. And as you know, one of the things I predicted, and I think you guys predicted too, that about the surge in entrepreneurial activity in 2004. I predicted
That's right.
in my letter last week, and you guys did too. So you're exactly right. You're right on the money, and that's exactly what's happening. But the thing about it, folks, I think we shouldn't get our undergarments too wadded up here about this because Joan, Congress will fix this. Small business
yes.
is too much up on the radar screen. I promise you, both parties don't want to make small business owners mad because they don't want me turning small business owners loose on them.
That's right.
Because I'll open up a can of small business on those guys, and they won't like that. 29 after. We'll stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend, Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back at 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with us. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And I got an outstanding website I'd like to tell you about, folks. It's Kiplinger.com. KIPLINGER.com. I'd really encourage you to go there and just noodle around on the site and see what's going on there. A lot of free stuff there. And you can also find out more about how to subscribe to their publications, their outstanding publications. The flagship Kiplinger Letter has been around now in its 81st year. And all the publications, the four letters come email or print. And, of course, the Kiplinger Letter is the weekly, and then they have three biweekly letters, the agriculture letter, the tax letter, and the California letter. And then they also have a magazine, Joan. What's that? What's that
right, like? It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah, and it's been around for over a half century. And all those you can find out about and subscribe there. Still got that 30-day free trial, Joan?
Sure do. The Blasingame free trial.
That's right. I worked hard for that, folks. And also the 800 number. Joan, go ahead and give us that, please.
Sure. It's 800-544-0155.
Now, Joan, the other prediction you guys made is what's ahead for the stock market. And I want you to tell us a little bit about this, because I think maybe you went a little soft on us here. Go ahead.
You mean we weren't Pollyanna-ish enough?
I don't know where you got this number. I can't believe you came up with this number. Go ahead. Tell us what it is.
Well, we said the Dow will top 11,000 this year. Isn't that good enough?
What is it right now, Joan?
Oh, it's over 10,000.
It's close to 11,000. It's like 5 or 6 or something like that, isn't it? I've forgotten what it closed at yesterday.
I don't remember.
We don't have, Joan, a couple of good rallies, and, you know, in a week we could be at 11,000.
Well, we said the Dow will top 11,000 this year. We didn't say it wouldn't top 12,000.
But I mean, you know, that's no great venture. That's no great venture into prognostication by saying 11,000. Come on. I mean, you guys could have a little grit and do like I did. I predicted. You know what I predicted? I predicted that the Dow would not only exceed the January 2000 record of 11,722. But I predicted that it would go even higher this year. I'm not going to say how high.
Well, I seem to remember getting a lot of grief for a previous stock market prediction that turned out to be right.
I don't remember that. Moving on
collective
to the
memory.
Moving on to page two, John. Let's talk about politics. Here's another bold venture into prognostication has made too, John. But I have to admit,
The November election.
I made the same one. Go ahead, tell us what's happening.
Well, a big surprise. Hope everyone's sitting down. Our belief is that President Bush will win the election in November. He is the odds-on favorite. We're not saying that there couldn't be something that could happen to change that, but with all the advantages he has, we just don't see what could happen.
Let's not tempt fate too much because there are things that could happen, but it sure looks pretty solid right now.
Well, say that events could defeat him.
Yeah.
But I guess given that the Democrats, you know, still are fumbling around to find a good candidate, and given that the huge financial advantage he has and the party unity behind him, it would have to be something major to derail his candidacy.
Well, I wouldn't want to be. All I'll say is I wouldn't want to be a serious Democrat presidential candidate right now. If you're just out there like you and I both know some of them are, just for the 15 minutes of fame, because they never had a snowball's chance of being nominated or even being taken seriously. Other than those guys, if you really thought you wanted to be president and thought you possibly could be, this wasn't the year to run.
That's true.
And so I don't know whether to feel sorry for them or take my hat off to them for having just raw courage and conviction, but also let's talk about the other political predictions you made, Joe. Tell us about those.
Well, we say that Republicans will keep control of Congress, but within that prediction is the very important prediction regarding the Senate. We're saying that the Republicans will. I don't think they're just likely to. I think they will increase their 51-49 margin, and that's because I can just reel off a whole list of names of Southern Democrats who are not going to stand for re-election
right now, five
this year.
Right
and
now,
that's
five
huge.
And
the Democrats have had trouble winning in the South already. But without these incumbents, some of whom were very strong, Hollingsborough, Graham of Florida.
Zell Miller in Georgia.
Zell Miller. I mean, it just, I don't understand how they win any of these states.
Well, and also, Joan, the other thing I don't think you guys predicted, but I did, and that's that Howard Dean will be the nominee for the Democrats. Candidate Dean is going to cost the Democrats a number of Southern Senate seats.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because
he'll have negative coattails.
Mr. Dean doesn't have a lot of Q in the South. The others don't care too much for his attitude. Unless just the really hardcore Democrats will vote for him. But most of the others won't. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, we've got Ann Gerhart has written a book about Laura Bush. Joan, did you know that?
Fact. There was a very fascinating article in yesterday's Washington Post. It was an excerpt from the book. It was all about the twins.
Oh, really?
It was fascinating.
Are
I should
serious?
Email it to you. I am not kidding.
Yeah. Well,
and it was so in depth and catty. I thought, boy, the Post doesn't normally get this way.
Wow.
And then I realized it was an excerpt from the book.
Well, she's going to be on the show tomorrow.
No.
The title of the book is called The Perfect Wife, Joan.
Yes.
So maybe you should read this so you can kind of take some lessons.
I would be happy.
you could kind of become the perfect wife.
I'm hopeless. I'm in love with another man anyway.
That's right. That's true.
That just so your listeners understand, that man is Washington Redskins coach Joe Gibbs. Boy, that sounds good
to say. Joan, I'm amazed that you've taken 44 minutes to get that into our conversation.
It took every ounce of self-control.
I've never seen you so giddy. Folks, Joe Gibbs has just become the coach of the Washington Redskins.
After
a 12-minute absence, a 12-year absence, and I can't get her to stop talking about this. Joan, get a grip.
It's the happiest day of my life.
I can't believe we're able to work this into our on-the-air time.
But you knew I would.
I guess I did. But moving on, Joan, what I was trying to say, folks, is that I'm excited about having Ann Gerhart on the show to talk about that. And we got a lot of other folks lined up. Oh, by the way, John Fox and Bill Huss, two of our outstanding attorney members of our Brain Trust, are going to join us together, and we're going to talk about mediation, about using that as an option to lawsuits and building that into contracts. So that's also coming up in the show ahead. And I wouldn't be amazed, I guess, if Joan figured out a way to work Joe Gibbs into that.
I'll do my best.
Okay, Joan, who's going to be running Iraq in the year 2000 at the end of the 2004?
Well, we say it'll still be us. We will be sort of the de facto managers. You know, we're trying to move toward this coalition authority. Well, we had the coalition authority, and then we're going to have a local council running Iraq. But we can't really let our presence evaporate there. They need our firepower.
I predicted that we would turn over control of Iraq to the governing council by no later than the end of September. But even though it might be symbolic, it will happen. That's my
It would seem to me they would want to do it before the election.
Right, thus September. That's before September.
Right.
Because, and as I said, it'll be symbolic, but it'll be symbolic from a political standpoint, but it'll be symbolic from, as well as productive, though, from the standpoint of that community over there. I think we're going to start seeing quantum leaps in self-determination in Iraq this year. I think every month that goes by, we're going to see improvements because you've noticed, Joan, that we've Libya's decided to work and play well with others.
Well, they just caved in, didn't they?
North Korea, is starting to behave themselves a little bit.
That's right.
Iran's got its own problems; they need to be focusing a little bit more on their own internal stuff. And did you see where Syria is starting to come around a little bit?
That's right.
And so, folks, all those things I predicted, Joan, early last year, that were going to happen, have started to happen. I know it's scary when I start looking smart for you, Joan, but it is. Joan, you guys have an observation about how the U.S. would do if with a major terrorist attack in the future. Give us your ideas on that.
Well, the point that we're making is we're asking the question if the U.S. would rebound faster from an attack like the 9/11 attack in the future. And I guess that's kind of the silver lining to the cloud from 9/11 is that we've done so much work in improving preparedness that we would be a lot more prepared the next time around.
Well, and on so many levels. I mean, it'll still be devastating in a lot of ways. It would still
right.
hurt us. It would probably, you know, there would probably be some casualties involved. But the thing is, and Joan, you know, folks, we don't mean to sound, you know, cavalier about something like this, but just in reality, you know, once you've been attacked, the second time is devastating. Hopefully, it will be. But Joan, I will tell you, and you probably saw this. I did predict that there will be a major attempt of terrorism. I didn't say that it would happen. I said it would be attempted in 2004 before the election.
Sorry.
I was just going to say probably in the first half.
Well, you know what's difficult is there may have been attempts over the last couple of weeks,
yeah.
And if they were thwarted at an early point, we'll never know.
Well, that's true, but it doesn't appear that there were any major ones. And when I say major, I mean on the 911 level, coordinated,
yeah.
Multi-targets, that kind of thing. I believe that that we got an excellent chance. And you know why, Joan? Because George Bush is terrorist enemy number one.
Right, and he's running for re-election.
That's right.
And they would love nothing more than to damage that, I would think.
And if they use history as an example, we know what Iran did to Jimmy Carter back.
Exactly.
That's
a good parallel.
The late
yeah.
70s. So I think
good parallel, Jim.
Well, and the thing is, though, the reason I'm saying the first half is because they want it to happen early enough so that the patriotism part of it wears off before the election. In other words, if they
right.
did it in September, we'd all be rallying around the flag through the election day.
Right.
So
that's a good point.
Watch out for the first half, folks. I'm not being cavalier about this. I hope
no.
it doesn't happen, but it's just something that I think is a reality.
Yeah.
Joan, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some things that I know are near and dear to your heart, and that is some of the things that businesses are going to be going through in 2004, especially with regard to employees, with pensions, and that sort of thing. Joan's one of our experts on that. We'll be doing that right after these messages. Tintel, stay with us. Seven till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, talk to us about some of the stuff that the GOP is going to try to do. The Republicans are going to try to do with health insurance, and whether they're going to have a chance in getting it done.
Well, in 2004, the Republicans are going to try to pass tax credits that would help the uninsured buy their own health coverage. And, in fact, you'll hear the president mention this in his State of the Union address. Now, this is something that the Democrats won't go for, and we're saying that they will successfully thwart that this year.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, Joan, though, they're on the wrong side of this. They're on the wrong side of holding back a tide. This is a classic example of a political party not understanding how the century is shaping up. I mean, you and I both know, Joan, whenever I say that the 21st century is a century of the entrepreneur, you don't argue with me. You know that that's true. And you know, whether we agree on all political things or not, the point is that you can't deny the entrepreneurial movement no more than you can deny the generational waves.
Right.
And the Democrats,
well, I think, though, that the Democrats want the government to do more.
But the thing is, though, is that's not what the people that we're talking about want. The people we're talking about want to be able to buy their own insurance. They don't want the government to do it for them.
Well, the Republicans are proposing that through tax credits.
Well, okay, tax credits are fine, but not, we don't want the government in charge of our health care.
Well, No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I guess the problem is, once again, we're skewing the tax code to do something when, in fact, if you want the government to help out, then just do it directly rather than doing it through the tax code.
Well, I hear
That's
you,
why our tax code is so complicated and crazy.
But what the tax code needs to be doing is moving toward, as you and I have talked about before, is moving toward making the credits available to the individuals, not to the employers.
Or finding a different way to, I think the concern is that the credits for the individuals won't give them as much bang for their buck because they're individuals.
Well, maybe so. And of course, as you know, and as it probably sounds, folks, and it really is, this is a complex issue,
True.
Joan, as you know. Let's talk about pensions. What's going on with the world of pensions?
Okay, well, two things. Number one, cash balance plans, which are hybrid plans that have been used to great success by companies who want to get out of their old-style pensions, have sort of been frozen because of some court cases and the inability of the Treasury to write new regulations. But Treasury is going to go ahead, and Congress is actually going to go ahead and pass some legislation that will allow the Treasury to go forward and make things clear about the legal status of cash balance plans.
Mm-hmm. All right. And how is that? When is that going to happen, you think?
Well, it'll be later this year, probably the second half of this year. It'll be a while.
And how is that going to tell us again how that's going to help businesses?
Well, businesses that have old-style pension plans that are finding them too expensive and want to get out of them but don't want to just have no benefit can switch to these so-called hybrid plans and save some money. And also, there are don't have time to go into it, but there are features of these plans that are attractive to younger workers, which is, I think, very important.
Which is other evidence, Joan, about adjusting the laws and the rules to fit the way things are working, the way the marketplace is working in the 21st century.
That's
There's
right.
So many things that we've got to do. We've got to focus on, folks, to make sure that the 21st century fits the 21st century tax laws fit 21st century marketplace, not the 20th century marketplace. Joan, before we go, we've got about a minute. Let's talk about one last topic, and that's the mad cow disease. This is so much hysteria over nothing. It just amazes me how we allow the news media to blow something out of proportion.
Well, I guess the problem is other countries getting hysterical and shutting down our exports.
Right.
Which really concerns me, and we can't seem to be able to convince them to change their minds. But now that we've identified that cow came from Canada, maybe things that will help.
Well, it's one cow. It's the only one we found.
Right.
And
it didn't originate here.
And we did find it.
Yes.
So the system worked.
Right.
You know, and you know how many people die from E. coli from chickens and turkeys that aren't cleaned properly every year?
Right, right.
You know?
That's a lot.
But you know what? We don't call it. But you know, if we call that disease the silly chicken disease, it would be maybe a bigger reaction. But because
right.
we have something called the mad cow disease, we kind of go off on that.
That's right.
Aren't you glad we're out of time so I don't go off on my soapbox on this?
That's right.
Thanks, Joan.
Thank you, Jim.
See you next time.
Okay.
Bye bye. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. Continue to seek excellence, please. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.